We are here to talk a little about a very important topic, which is actually relevant to this whole series, from Sinai to Manhattan. Last week we had a little Ask the Rabbi session, but this is actually considered part of the from Sinai to Manhattan, because that whole series is about analyzing contemporary issues from a halachic Jewish legal perspective. Now, what halachic issue could be involved with celebrating something as sweet and nice as religiously innocuous, if you will, as Thanksgiving? Why would there be any issue at all? Look at the title of your packet. I want to thank my friend, Rabbi Michael Broyd, who is a professor of law at Emory and a great Torah scholar. He put this packet together to discuss, from a Jewish legal perspective, is it okay for Jews, religious Jews, to celebrate Thanksgiving?
No.
Why? I mean, everyone here is celebrating Thanksgiving. It's kind of like, it's a little of a spoiler here, but what issues would be involved? With why would there be a question at all about celebrating Thanksgiving? It could be idol worship issues. Why?
It's started by the pilgrims.
Who started Thanksgiving? We're going to talk about that. In order for us to analyze this, we really have to understand who started Thanksgiving. Was it having anything to do with idolatrous practices? By the way, the same question arises with Halloween. The same question arises with what else?
Christmas.
New Year's.
And some people will say Christmas is so devoid of anything religious today. It's so commercial. It's all about the sales. That, you know, can you really say it has any even Christmas, right? What else? What's another holiday?
Yeah,
New Year's.
Yeah.
New Year's. What's that?
Valentine's
Day is an excellent. Where does Valentine's Day come from?
Valentine's Day Mass.
Saint, right? That's not a very Jewish kind of thing. But, like, Jews are posting, hey, my Valentine, you know. So, it's actually a broader issue than Thanksgiving. But we're going to start with Thanksgiving, and this packet actually contains information about New Year's and Halloween as well. Thanksgiving has got its own set of issues, but before we can analyze any Jewish question, we have to first understand what's called in Hebrew the metzias, the facts, what's before us. Right? We talked about the Siamese twins, but Moshe Feinstein needed to figure out what was the status of these twins. We had to speak to C. Everest Koop. So before we can even jump into the halachic legal ramifications, we have to know what is Thanksgiving. So we got to get into a little American history. As we start, maybe somebody wants to sing a little like in the background while we read this. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Thanksgiving is a uniquely American holiday. It is no longer, and perhaps never was, a celebration affiliated with a particular religion or faith, although some in America celebrate with religious ceremonies. What's a religious ceremony that people use to celebrate Thanksgiving?
At the Catholic school I work at, they have Mass today for Thanksgiving.
They have a special Mass for Thanksgiving. Now, most Jewish homes don't have Mass when they break out the turkey. But what do most Jews who celebrate Thanksgiving do?
Make a bracha.
You're eating, so in order to eat, you recite a blessing. Are you doing it for Thanksgiving? There's one synagogue, actually, that doesn't say Tachanun on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what Tachanun is? There's a prayer where you go like this. You put your head on your... And it's a very sad prayer. And you omit this sad prayer anytime there's a bris or some other happy occasion. So there's one synagogue that omits Tachanun on Thanksgiving because it's a day of celebration.
Yeah.
But it's not a Jewish day of celebration, so is that justified? Talk about this. Yeah.
Interjection question.
Yes.
I was told that also if someone like got married, you're not supposed to Tachanun. Is that correct?
Correct.
So if you're like in a random...
Minion,
and you don't really know anyone, are you supposed to be like, hey, by the way, guys, before, like, I don't know anybody here.
During the week of Sheva Brachot, they're not supposed to say Tachanun. Anyone who's in the Minion.
Are you kidding me? They'll love you.
Right.
Have you ever been to a Minion where there's a guy who just got married, you never met him, and they're like, I just got married. The whole Minion is like so happy because everyone says Tachanun.
Yeah. We actually dedicated a Sefer Torah. We dedicated a new Torah scroll this past Sunday. It was beautiful. We went into the other room to Davin Mincha, and we didn't say Tachanun because what happened in this room is we said a Shechianu, the blessing of renewal. You can't say Tachanun when you're saying a Shechianu. Shechianu is thanking God for bringing you to this great moment. Then you go into the other room and you go, oh, hey, my life is terrible. This is awful. I mean, that's kind of what the Tachanun prayer is. So There is one synagogue, but very people. I was there once when they, and there were a lot of Jews that were very critical of that. They didn't feel like it amounts to enough to push off Tachanun. But before any halachic analysis can be done, it's necessary to place the observance of the holiday of Thanksgiving in America in the proper historical context. Now, this is really good for your Thanksgiving dinner, because someone asks you to say something at the Thanksgiving dinner, what do you usually say? Oh, I'm thankful for this. This year, you can do something more substantive. You can say, I'd like to give a little historical perspective on the holiday. And you can sound really intelligent and just pull this out of your pocket and just start reading. The first Thanksgiving was held when? In 1622, in response to the survival by the pilgrims of the particularly harsh winter of 1622-1623. Not only did the colonists themselves celebrate, but food was sufficiently plenty that even the Indians, with whom the colonists were at peace, were invited. The celebration took place on July 30th, 1623, right in the middle of the summer. Similar such celebrations occurred throughout New England area throughout the 1600s. However, they were only local, rather than national, even religious celebrations, only to mark the end of a particularly difficult winter until 1789. A little music would be. In 1789, Congressman Elias Boutinot of New Jersey proposed in Congress a resolution urging President Washington to recommend to the people of the United States. I love the way they spoke in those days. Everything sounds so grand. Ever see the letter that George Washington wrote to the community in Rhode Island? You've been to the Touro Synagogue in Rhode Island? Anybody been? It's really beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful letters in George Washington's own handwriting. And he signed it and talks about the Jewish people as the stock of Abraham, fighting for religious freedom alongside the revolutionaries. It's beautiful. Anyway, in 1789, this congressman from New Jersey urged Washington to, quote, recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of the Almighty God. Sounds like a pretty religious thing. Now, right away, you're thinking, what God? Is it the Jewish God? Is it a generic enough God that that's okay? Or is it Jesus? Because that might actually create an issue. Especially by affording them an opportunity to establish a constitution of government for their safety and happiness. After quite a debate, Washington issued the first National Thanksgiving Proclamation, setting November 26, 1789, as Thanksgiving as a national holiday. And he stated, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th of December. What's tomorrow?
November.
Of November. What's tomorrow?
22nd.
Right. I don't know. Why is it early this year?
It's the last Thursday of the month.
It's always, right, okay, but Washington didn't agree with that. He assigned the 26th day of November to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all that good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him, capital H, our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation. For the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interposition of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war. Anybody know what war he's talking about?
Revolutionary
War. For the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed. For the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been able to establish constitutions of government for our staple. I can't read the staple. Something in happiness. And particularly the national, what does it say?
Safety
and habit. The national one now lately instituted for the civil and religious liberty. So what? According to Washington, what was Thanksgiving for?
So religious reasons for thanking God.
To thank God. For what specifically?
Being delivered from bad weather. Sorry.
Not bad weather, but what?
For good harvest.
What's that?
Peace.
Yeah. And from war with the British. And also the care and protection that we enjoyed previous to their becoming a nation, the degree of tranquility, union, and plenty. What's plenty? Food. I mean, it's actually really beautiful. Notwithstanding religious eloquence of Washington's words, Thanksgiving did not become a national holiday from 1790 to 1863.
What?
There were no national celebrations of Thanksgiving. I mean, even though Washington wanted it, it didn't stick. There, indeed, while proclamations of thanks were issued by some presidents, all the presidents for the next 70 years chose to ignore the day as a national day of Thanksgiving. It wasn't until 1846 when the unity of the country was again in controversy because of the Missouri Compromise and the problems of slavery that Thanksgiving as a national holiday returned to the national agenda. There was a campaign to turn Thanksgiving into a national holiday, not go to work, and her campaign culminated in President Lincoln's Thanksgiving Proclamation of 1863, the first such proclamation of a national Thanksgiving since 1789, and since then, there's been a national holiday and a day of rest. And you would ask, next paragraph, whether Jewish law should simply defer to American law determination that Thanksgiving is, quote, a secular. Does it go down as a religious holiday? Even though Washington thought of it as a religious thing, what is Thanksgiving today? It's really secular. It's not like it's only observed by Christians or Muslims. I think most Muslims don't necessarily celebrate it. It's a very American kind of thing. I guess if you were a Muslim American, you've been here enough generations, you would probably celebrate it. But more recently arrived Muslims, I don't think, tend to, because it's more of an American kind of holiday. It's not because you're a Christian. It's not because you're a Muslim. It's not because you're a Jew. It's because you're American and you're saying thanks. Yeah.
So why wouldn't we say that about Halloween? Because it's definitely not about like paganism. Now it's about,
what is it about today? Well, what is
up,
is it?
Getting drunk and wearing costumes.
I have another question.
So the question then is: Thanksgiving was instituted not as a religious holiday, even though Washington declared it more of a religious thing. When it eventually became instituted as a holiday, it became instituted as a secular holiday. Christmas, as much as Christmas,
something religious and running with it.
Oh, so that's the question.
Kind of the opposite of
Halloween started as a religious thing, actually a pre-Christian pagan holiday. Halloween.
Yeah,
it's in the back of the packet. We can touch on it later. It's not celebrated as a religious thing, but it was instituted as a religious thing. Thanksgiving wasn't instituted as a religious holiday at all. Even though you have people saying we're thanking God, and everyone's got in their own mind things that are happening. Yeah.
I have two questions. My first question is, like, America is very obviously a Judeo-Christian country, so we're not saying Jesus here, we're saying God, and don't the Christians or the Jews, we all share the same one God. And my other question is, like, you know,
Let's start with that. Yes and no. Yes and no, because on one hand, what
Jesus
do you think?
Jesus and stuff.
Yeah, yes and no, I agree with you.
Why do you think
but
yes?
God is God.
Yeah, the idea of, you know, God to Christians is a trinity most times. It's correct. God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit. So to them, their views, you know, of God is, you know, kind of, you know, an early Christianity, you know, believed in, oh, the old mean evil God that punished people, and, you know, in Exodus, you know, like, is was replaced by a superior love and tender care of God that
in
is
Jesus.
So,
right.
You know, early Christianity kind of like cancel out that, you know, that monotheism, mm-hmm. you know, Abrahamite.
Even though they consider that I've had conversations with Christian members of the clergy, they somehow still want to consider themselves monotheists.
Right.
Even though they believe in a trinity. But it's still one God with three different parts, so to speak. It's difficult. Because the early Christians, by the way, never believed that Jesus was God. They believed Jesus was the Messiah. And then he became a God.
Right. So that goes into a different conversation. Some early Christians believed that, but some didn't. There are different versions of Christianity.
Sure.
It was never uniform. So Paul taught one thing, you know, the other disciples, apostles taught different things, and the people that came after also taught different things. So there's different versions of Christianity back then.
Right.
And one version was, you know, where people were, you know, it was really all Gentiles, and a lot of them thought one version of it was, hey, that old mean, you know,
God has got to be replaced.
It is gone.
So how would you say that that we're subscribing to the same God?
Well,
I'm not challenging it.
Okay. I would think that we are in the concept that, you know, they usually use different words to describe the different aspects. So they'll say, you know, our Lord, meaning, you know, Jesus. You know, but when they say God, they usually mean,
the totality.
His father, which they think of as, you know, as Hashem. So, you know, mm-hmm. I think when, you know, there are certain words that almost denotes, you know, their Jesus, and there are words that denote.
So there's some Christians, when they say God, they don't have Jesus in mind, you're saying.
What's the word that denotes Jesus?
So they'll usually use words like our Lord or the Lord to describe Jesus, and then for God, the Father, they'll just say God. Right.
Yeah. It depends on the denomination.
So they wouldn't say Jesus our God, they would say Jesus our Lord and Savior, for example, or our Savior.
If I may interject, I've always felt like a lot of practicing Christians, either don't fully understand what the Trinity means, or B, a lot of people, especially these days, seem to kind of come up with their own interpretation. Right. Of what the Trinity means.
The Trinity is a very hard thing to understand.
Yeah. Well, so not all of Christianity subscribes to
the Trinity.
Correct.
But all of Christianity subscribes to the Trinity. It's a very what? Weird.
But I'll tell you something. We. I meant I.
Wait, what? Can you repeat that? They subscribe. They don't subscribe.
So not all of Christianity. They do subscribe to, but they don't at the same time, because they'll believe, you know, in those three aspects, but they right. see it as one. And then some actually believe, like the Catholics, you know. Like,
well, I had a situation. We were actually going to move into the... We were very close to buying the building next door, probably 4 or 5 years ago. They wouldn't sell, and we got them up to like 32-year lease. It was a whole discussion with them. So I became friends a little with the pastor.
Right.
And one of the issues we had was if we were going to share the building.
Share a wall with the church.
What's that?
Share a wall with the church.
Basically, right. Because there's a what's called the clergy house, which was actually designed over like 130 years ago by a Jew, of course. Before they built the church, they had the separate house, and then the church was built onto it. It's a huge church next door. We were going to just take over that home. That's a very significant space.
MGE or Jewish Center?
MGE. And I had a series of meetings with the pastor, Robert Brashear, who became a friend, a great guy, and they're Presbyterian. So the first question I had was, do you guys subscribe to the Trinity? And he said to me, he says, Rabbi, we are Christian, you know. That's what he said to me, like, you know, meaning, like, don't insult me. Like, if you're a Christian, you believe in the Trinity. Because I called Rabbi Feinstein, actually, the Rav Moshe Feinstein that I talked about at the other discussion, so his son. There's a big rabbi downtown. I went to see him. I wanted to go see him in person. And I took pictures of the church and the whole thing, because there are a lot of synagogues actually were churches originally. And the rule is basically you can turn a church into a synagogue, but you can't turn a synagogue into a church. But it was complicated here because we weren't buying. And it was, even though inside it's kind of a separate entity, from the outside it's one building. And it might look like MGE was basically opening up a church, you know. So I had to show them all the things, and it was very interesting, because also we'd be paying rent to the church. So we would be profiting an institution that was associated with idol worship, according to some commentaries, according to some rabbis. He actually was very good about the whole, I mean, he felt it was fine. It blew up because it just wasn't a good deal at the end of the day. It needed so much work. I spent a good year on studying this building. I brought engineers and the whole thing in. And I still have a good relationship. But I learned a lot about Presbyterianism as opposed to Catholicism, as opposed to other parts of Protestant church. And it's complicated. They have a lot of different, you know, as you were saying.
So what I meant by they subscribe to Christianity, to the Trinity, and then but some others think that they don't, but they do, because they'll try to dissect it, like, hey, you know, the Trinity is kind of like giving that a Catholic label. So they still think of, you know, Jesus Christ as being, you know, kind of like God and the flesh, right? Or like directly, like kind of like a demigod almost.
Mm-hmm.
So they still think of him in that sense, and they're thinking of the Spirit of God as like a separate entity. I don't know where they got the Spirit part.
Mm-hmm.
But they're thinking of it as like a separate entity, but they just won't use words like Trinity, because to them that's more like, oh, that's like a Catholic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then to people who are, you know, I think Presbyterians, they do. I mean, they're kind of like almost similar to Catholic, and, you know. But
well, the difference for us is, and we'll come back to this later, in terms of actually going into a church.
Well, I had a two-part question.
Yeah, well, you had a point.
I did, yes. So
we're going to get your second point
in light of this conversation. Where does this put Jews for Jesus?
Oh, God. Well, and actually,
it was an inevitable question.
Jesus gets put out on the windowsill, in my opinion.
They always do.
No matter what conversation, because as much as we can theologically disagree with any kind of corruption, what we might see as a corruption of the unity and oneness of God, which classically Jews see Christianity as a corruption of that idea, the Trinity, right. All of this is problematic. The Jews for Jesus poses a different issue because they are, in my opinion, posing as Jews.
Right.
And in order to be successful into bringing people into what really is Christianity. It's one form of Christianity, which is just to believe that Jesus was the Messiah. And they'll say, oh, he's not really God, and we keep Shabbos, and we do this. I had a Jews for Jesus guy coming here for a while. He was a student, and I thought in the beginning he was just struggling. I was a little naive. And I thought I'd bring him over to the other side. He was referred to me, you know, and he's a nice Jewish guy from Long Island who got a little mixed up, in my opinion. So I thought he was actually, unfortunately, very unbalanced and did something really, really awful. And he was out of our community after probably about a year, but he was here for a good year. And I kept saying to him, if you celebrate Shabbat on Sunday, I said, we don't have to talk theology anymore. The Torah, the Old Testament says it's the seventh day of the week, not the first day of the week. And I don't know how much he was sort of brainwashed, but Jews for Jesus poses very, very serious issues because they're not only not Jewish, right. They might halachically be Jews because their mothers are Jewish or they converted, but they're sort of branding what they're doing as the authentic form of Judaism. Okay, and at least with our Christian brothers and sisters, we can say they have a different religion, and they believe that this religion is the authentic one, and you guys are doing the wrong thing. Your God is a punishing God, and we've got the compassionate God, and we've got the New Testament, the Old Testament, right? And it's clear there's a different religion. The problem with Jews for Jesus, like some other kinds of groups, is that they're posing as Jews and trying to demonstrate that they have the right version of Judaism. Which is what Christians did initially. That's the way Christianity was in the very beginning. But now it's pretty clear it's a different religion, and you can decide which religion you want to be part of. It's almost like the difference between Israel having to defend itself against another country or a indigenous population within that's very, very complicated. And I feel that way a little about the Jews for Jesus. I don't have a lot of love and
to your
sympathy
point,
for them.
I'd say a lot of their marketing borders on deception. A few months ago, I received something in the mail that I look like it came from a Jewish Orthodox organization completely. I mean, the title of like...
No, they wear talisim. They wear like a talis and shul. They'll have pictures of themselves wearing tefillin and... At the end of the day, it's just another approach to bring you into Christianity. And that's okay if you believe in Christianity. Just say that's who you are.
How effective are they actually, though?
They used to be much more.
Yeah.
When I grew up, they were like a big force. I think they lost a lot of funding. They were successful.
Yeah.
They used to prey a lot on Russian Jews when I was a kid.
Yeah. And they actively try to convert, which was not...
I wanted to bring this out.
You're going crazy. Go ahead.
Because I brought up the Christian God versus the monotheistic God for a reason.
Right.
Pledge of Allegiance. So I went to Parkey's Day School, and every day it was Pledge of Allegiance, and then we had to sing the Tikva. So I always thought there was God. I don't know. You're a little kid. Then there's the Israeli flag. And
yes.
Okay. So I'm like, what is that about? But more importantly,
say the whole thing.
We're supposed to follow civilian law, right, in the country we live in?
Yes.
So in this case...
As long as it doesn't...
Break Jewish law.
Correct.
So now we're debating whether, God of America, we say in God we trust on our dollar bills.
Right.
So was this whole Pledge of Allegiance thing,
No, so I think... What is your first name?
My first name is Yisrael. Yisrael. Izzy.
Hi, Izzy.
So Izzy actually spoke to it brilliantly, because he was explaining... And I think when George Washington, also you have to study George Washington's belief, he was a deist. I think a lot of these, their references to God and God we trust and all that can be safely not necessarily referring specifically to Jesus. Although, I think we're safe to say that, and I think it's okay. And that's why I also, when I went to Yeshiva Day School, they made us pledge allegiance to the And the reference was to God. Now, when my dad had to pledge allegiance to the flag in public school in Olefin, Pennsylvania, in 1948, 1949, 1950, when he was a kid, so he had to say Hail Marys.
What?
Yeah.
Public school?
What does that have to do public with the school. Flag?
How'd they get away with that?
That's the way it was in this country.
They were bad.
No, no, no. They
it's
would.
Like outright Christianity.
It was, yeah.
What's that have to do with the Bible?
Because it was part of what they had to say in the morning in public schools. That's why a lot of the more liberal Jewish, you don't have to be that liberal, the Jewish groups fought against this for years in the 1950s and 60s and were successful in getting prayer out of public school. Because prayer in public school was primarily Christian. Now, let's go back for a minute. These are very good questions, and we're going to come back to them all in answering this question. You guys with me?
Yeah.
So, fine. Now, halakha canals Thanksgiving. Having reviewed the history, it's now necessary to turn to the question of halakhic issues. The first and most significant issue, second to last paragraph on the page, guys, it says 20 on top, is whether it's permissible to eat a Thanksgiving meal with the classical foods that American tradition indicates you should eat at this meal. What are those foods?
Turkey
and cranberry sauce. I don't like cranberry sauce, but if you don't eat cranberry sauce, you're not a very good American. That was a joke. Among the authorities of the previous generation, there are three different positions have been taken on this topic. There's always two or three. And I'm going to go through all three with you right now. Before these three positions can be understood, let's give a little background. There is a prohibition to imitate Gentile customs. Tosfos understands, that's one of the commentators in the Talmud, that two distinctly different types of customs are forbidden by this prohibition to imitating Gentile customs. It's a verse in the book of Leviticus, not to follow chukot hagoyim, the laws of the nations in which you live. It's in 18:3, chapter 18, verse 3. The first is idolatrous customs, and the second one is foolish customs found in the Gentile community, even if their origins are not idolatrous. Rabbeinu Nissim and Maharik, later commentators, disagree and say that only customs that have a basis in idolatrous customs are prohibited. Apparently foolish, but secular customs are permissible as long as they have some kind of reasonable explanation. We'll give you examples. So you have to, that's the major issue. Is it a prohibition of chukot hagoyim, following the laws of the nations, of the Gentile nations, by observing Thanksgiving? What is usually classically understood in this prohibition? Following laws that have been enacted by the government in which you live that have idolatrous sources to them. If they're just foolish things, but they have some kind of reason to them, but they're not idolatrous, then most rabbinic opinions, not all, but most rabbinic opinions say it's okay, as long as there's no association with idol worship. So we're going to go through three opinions now that discuss Thanksgiving and whether or not they break that rule. Yes?
I don't know if it's going to take us off.
We've already been there, so.
I feel like I read somewhere that, like, American Thanksgiving is okay to celebrate because it's secular, but Canadian Thanksgiving has a religious
aspect. Oh, really?
And you're not allowed to celebrate that.
What are the Canadians?
I don't know. I was trying to find it online. I read it somewhere, but I'll find it online.
I always assume, by the way, if anyone takes out their phone and go to my class, that they're just researching, doing further, deeper research into their Torah. Yeah. Wait, so... Is there something more religious about Canadian thing?
I feel like...
First of all, Canada has Thanksgiving? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's the first Monday of October.
Oh.
Are you
Canadian?
Oh.
She's Canadian, yes.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein published four responses about Thanksgiving in his lifetime. He was asked this question so many times. He published four different opinions. And in all of them, they conclude that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday. He, by the way, was a great patriot. He loved this country. He was from Europe and appreciated the liberties that America gave Jews. The first response, of which he wrote in 1953, discusses the deliberate scheduling of weddings and the like on religious holidays of other faiths. And he says that on the question of celebrating any event on the holiday of Gentiles, if the holiday is based on religious beliefs, then such celebrations are prohibited if they're deliberately scheduled on that day. Again, if there's a religious belief. And then he reinforces his understanding that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday in 1980. Many years later, he wrote, quote, on the bottom, on the issue of joining with those who think Thanksgiving is like a holiday to eat a meal, since it's clear that according to the religious law books, this day is not mentioned as a religious holiday, that one is not obligated in eating a meal, and since this is a day of remembrance to citizens of this country, which they came to reside here either now or earlier, halacha sees no prohibition in celebrating with a meal or the eating of turkey. In fact, we have a source in Kedushin 66, that's in the Talmud, that Yanai, the king, made a party after the conquest of Kochlet in the desert, and they eat vegetables as a remembrance. So something good happens to your life. There is a tradition, actually, that you have a nice little celebration. We have, my wife went to recently, a very dear friend, just was declared in remission from her cancer therapy, from her by her oncologist, and she made, let's call it, the Sudas Hoda'a. She invited a group of her friends to her home, and they had a celebration meal, thanking God for her being, you know, cancer clean, cancer free, right? And there is a tradition of doing this. Nonetheless, he says it's prohibited to establish this as an obligation and a religious commandment. You can't, he says, do this every day on the same time every year, and it should remain a voluntary celebration. Does anybody know why is Rav Moshe saying there's nothing problematic? It's a good thing to thank God when good things go on in your life, but you shouldn't do it on the same exact day as a religious obligatory type of thing. Why?
Because of a chazaka?
We said because of Marasayan.
You guys are throwing around these terms. Chazaka means if you do something three times, it becomes a thing. Maris Ayin, what is it, Maris Ayin? It looks like what?
It's like if it shows maybe Jews who aren't as observant that this is what observant Jews should be doing.
Okay, that's interesting. But there's actually another prohibition. How many mitzvot are there in the Torah?
613.
What if, Max, you woke up one day and you said, you know, I put on my tzitzis and I see that there are four strings. I'd like to add a fifth.
614.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You're not supposed to add or subtract from the Torah. We could spend a lot of time on that, but the basic philosophy is you get the recipe from the ultimate chef. You don't play with the recipe. The recipe is perfection. We don't take a little away. We don't add on to more. The concern is that this would become an obligatory ritual that you would do every year at the same time in the same way. It might appear as though you're adding a mitzvah to the Torah. Yes?
Okay, so how does that apply to Hanukkah? Is it just because...
Good question.
Right.
Because Hanukkah, strengthen your question.
It was set up by Judas, right? So
Hanukkah was set up at a time where there was still a semblance of the Sanhedrin and the Great Assembly. They still had that legal authority to create, but it was not a...
So it was set up by Judas?
It was set up by the Maccabean family, basically, and it was accepted by all of Israel as a holiday, rabbinic holiday.
Yes.
Doesn't have the same status as the other holidays. The only thing that's missing, you could ask the same question about Purim. The only difference between Purim and Hanukkah is that we have a canonized...
We have a tractate.
We have a tractate. But what's more important, what we have by Purim and not Hanukkah? Megillah. We have the Megillah. We have part of the canonized Bible, which was entered into Scripture, Megillat Esther. We don't have that by Hanukkah. What do you have by Hanukkah? You have a book called Maccabees 1 and Maccabees 2, which is considered apocryphal literature. Not that we
is
don't
it
take
a
it seriously.
To light Hanukkah candles then?
100%, but it's rabbinic.
Rabbinic.
Now, Purim is also rabbinic. Purim is also rabbinic. It happened post the five books. Anything that's after the five books of Moses can have biblical status by definition. But it can still... This came up, and when we get to closer to May, I'm going to spend a little time with you guys talking about Yom HaTzma'ut. Because this happened after 48. Can we create a new holiday called Yom HaTzma'ut?
Yom HaShoah for that.
Can you create Yom HaShoah, which is even more problematic because we already have a day for Yom HaShoah. What's the day for Yom HaShoah called?
Tisha B'Av.
It's called Tisha B'Av. You think we created a new day for the Crusades, the Inquisitions, every pogrom? Why the Holocaust should be any different? That was supposed to be the catch-all day. What about 1948? Who are you to create a new holiday? Well, I don't know. You're not going to mark, after 2,000 years, Jewish people being able to come back and live as a free, independent people in the land of their forefathers. You're not going to mark that in some kind of religious way. You're not going to say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut. What about 67 when we got Jerusalem back?
So what was the difference between Yom HaShoah and Crusades, pogroms, and the Inquisition. Why wasn't there a day?
So the rabbis initially opposed Yom HaShoah for that reason.
Yeah.
They basically gave in because it was such a sensitive thing and the survivors wanted a separate day.
Yeah.
And the Holocaust was of such magnitude that to create any more divisiveness, to allow any, you know, the community, but it would be wrong of us theologically on Tisha B'Av rather, not to commemorate the Shoah. We have special keynote that we say on Tisha B'Av for the Shoah, and we would be remiss religiously if we didn't do that. But in deference to the many survivors that wanted its own day and that weren't so bought in maybe religiously to that other argument, they just did it. But does it have a religious status of a holiday? That's the question. And to this day, the modern Orthodox community struggles with what religious status does Yom HaTzma'ut have? Do you take it as seriously as Pesach? As Sukkot, the Shavuot? Now, you can't because one's biblical and one's rabbinic, but do you take it as seriously as Purim and Hanukkah? What about some of the prayers that are said on Tisha B'Av? After 67, Rabbi Gorin, who was the chief rabbi of the Israeli army during the Six-Day War, and one of the things that you say on Tisha B'Av, you say that there are no longer children laughing in the streets of Jerusalem. He says, after 67, there are children laughing in the streets of Jerusalem. Go to Yerushalayim now. They're probably sleeping. But there are probably some crazies walking around the old city in Jerusalem laughing and celebrating and being Jewish. Can you still say that very sad prayer? There were rabbis, Orthodox rabbis, that called for removing certain prayers. Because you're not supposed to say things that aren't true. Yet, the Messiah hasn't come. There's no rebuilt temple. Lots of Jews are living in the diaspora. We're living in very strange kind of times. It's a little nishtahin, nishtaher. It's like a little this, a little not. You know what I mean? A lot of our people, half the Jewish people, are living in Israel today. And it's thriving. But there's no temple, and there's no Messiah, and there's certainly no universal peace and brotherhood and love like the prophets envision for the Messianic age. So what do you do with those prayers? We're living in a very, very interesting time. I'm not answering all these questions tonight, but they're all raised with the same question of Thanksgiving. And I'm going to come back to it. I celebrate Yom HaTzmaut as a holiday, as a religious holiday, but I don't say, I say challah, but I say without a blessing. And because that's what Rav Soloveitchik held. Rav Soloveitchik, who was the biggest Zionist, religious Zionist in the world, he broke with the Aguda, who his father and his grandfather were heads of. He became persona non grata with the Agudas Rabbanim, with all the Haredi and ultra-Orthodox rabbinate. And the Soloveitchiks were the leaders of that group before the Rav, before this one. And he broke with them over religious Zionism because he felt it needed to be marked in some real way. Because he felt it was an expression of God's hand in human history. He didn't believe in changing rituals. He was very against. In fact, I have a teacher of mine who was saying Hallel at Yeshiva University on Yom HaTzmaut, and the Rav was there and he stormed out. Now, he told people they could do it, but he wouldn't be there for it. just like he doesn't use Erev, but he would answer people's questions about an Erev. He was very complicated. We'll come back to all these things later. Are you a little confused? That's fine. Let's move on. Rav Moshe Feinstein basically said there's nothing wrong with celebrating Thanksgiving, but don't do it in a ritual kind of way. So if you eat turkey one year, don't eat turkey. Or if you eat it, celebrate it on a different day. Or move the cranberry sauce a little to the left. I don't know, do something a little different so that it doesn't become like another mitzvah kind of thing. But otherwise, he felt it was okay. It's funny, a lot of the more ultra-Orthodox world doesn't really celebrate Thanksgiving much, actually. Take a look, let's just finish this. Rabbi Feinstein recently published Tshuva also written in 1980. Recently published. This was written a few years ago. Seems to state that, in fact, there is a prohibition to celebrate Thanksgiving, even though he acknowledges Thanksgiving has no religious content. In that tshuva, in that responsa, he views such celebratory activity on Thanksgiving as irrational, thus prohibited as a form of imitating secular society. But a closer examination of that letter reveals that the only time Rabbi Feinstein would consider that conduct prohibited is if it was done with celebratory rituals associated with actually celebrating Thanksgiving. Maybe if you had a text or you sang a song, not just eating a meal. Indeed, Rabbi Feinstein, in his fourth tshuva on this topic, clearly recognizes that even this is a stricture, as is predicated on the approach which argues that secular rituals that have no religious origins are prohibited by the prohibition of imitating Gentiles, blah, 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 blah. Okay, you'll read this more on your home. Basically, he says it's okay, but don't ritualize it. Okay? Now, Rabbi Soloveitchik felt it was completely okay. He also agreed, turned the page, that Thanksgiving was not a Gentile holiday and ruled that it was permissible to eat turkey on Thanksgiving. Rav Herschel Schechter, in his intellectual biography of Rabbi Soloveitchik, Nefesh HaRav, says, it was the opinion of Soloveitchik that it was permissible to eat turkey at the end of November. On the day of Thanksgiving, we understood that in his opinion, there was no question that turkey did not lack a tradition of kashrut, and that eating it on Thanksgiving was not a problem with imitating Gentile customs. We also heard this was the opinion of his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. Others have also recounted that Rav Soloveitchik ruled this way, and that he found it difficult to understand how one could consider Thanksgiving a Gentile holiday, or that it was prohibited in any way to celebrate it. Indeed, there are instances when Rav Soloveitchik implied to his students that he and his family celebrated Thanksgiving, although she or class was always held on Thanksgiving. By the way, my Rebbe, I was in the same class for 5 years when I was in YU. Rav Parnas, he should live and be well. He was one of the big students of Rav Soloveitchik. He always said, guys, I'm not telling you not to celebrate Thanksgiving, but who said you can't also study some Talmud? So come to class and then go home and celebrate. So we did this, I did this every year. We always had school in the morning and then we celebrated in the afternoon. The approach of Rav Huttner, page 24, very interesting. The exact opposite approach, I got to give you something with a little opposite teeth to it, was Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. Chaim Berlin was one of the great yeshivot in Brooklyn, in the United States, and he was an awesome personality. And he ruled against Rav Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik, and he argues that it's obvious and apparent that whatever the merit of celebrating Thanksgiving the first time in the 1600s, the establishment of an annual holiday that's based on a Christian calendar is at the very least closely associated with idol worship and therefore prohibited. He says it smacks too much of Christianity. It's not based on the Jewish calendar, and it started out as a kind of religious thing. Rav Huttner argues that such celebration becomes a holiday, even though it wasn't instituted as one in 1789, even though you could say George Washington said he, capital H, but Lincoln, you can say, also didn't really speak of it in religious terms. It doesn't matter. It becomes a holiday, he said, through the creation of an annual observance. And that's inappropriate. In truth, one must distance oneself from these types of customs and even from those events that are similar to these types. The truth is simple and obvious, he said. And that's why a lot of people in the ultra-Orthodox world will not celebrate Thanksgiving. And then he gives another rabbi who agreed with him a little differently. That was Rav Menashe Klein, that halacha prohibits a celebration of Thanksgiving. And he says that halacha divides Gentile rituals into two distinctly categories. First category is things that Gentiles do out of silliness and irrationality. The second are those done for religious purposes or for purposes of immodesty. And then he cites the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, who rules that Gentile customs and law that have no Jewish basis should be avoided because they might have some kind of origin in idolatrous. In other words, if it's not a Jewish source to it, then even if it doesn't have a religious thing, it could be connected somehow because most holidays are. Most secular holidays or religious holidays are somehow. It's hard for us in 2018, I know, for this to resonate because things have become so secularized and so commercialized, even Christmas. Like, you know, to think that it could, but, in their minds, Avodah Zarah, idol worship, is such a severe prohibition that anything that smacks or anything that's kind of like next to it or near it. But there are two other great rabbinic giants who saw no issue with it. In Rav Moshe's case, as long as you don't ritualize it. In the Rav's case, Rav Soloveitchik's case, he didn't even say that was an issue. And therefore, I think it's okay. But if you want to, be careful and to follow Rav Huttner's approach, I just think the whole issue brings up a lot of very, very important ideas. Okay. Summation. Take a look on page 25 on top. The three premier authorities have taken three conflicting views. Rav Huttner said it was prohibited. Rav Soloveitchik permitted it, and even eating turkey. and no problem. And Rav Feinstein was sort of a middle ground. It's not a religious holiday, but try not to celebrate it in any kind of ritualistic kind of way.
Have fun, but not too much fun.
Right. Now, it's interesting, issues related to celebrating. Let's talk for a minute before we finish up about what we started talking about before. The issue of adding a day of celebration to the Jewish calendar. Yom HaShoah, remember we talked about that? Mm-hmm. What's the third thing that we've added in modern times? Yom HaShoah, Yom HaTzma'ut, and anybody else know a third?
Yom HaZikaron.
Yom HaZikaron is really connected to Yom HaTzma'ut. They go together.
Yom Yerushalayim.
Yom Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. What's Yom Yerushalayim celebrate? Anybody know?
The reunification
of Jerusalem. It's interesting. The custom of the Jewish Center. MJ follows the customs of the Jewish Center just because we're here in the same building. They're our partners, and I'm very close with the rabbis, and a lot of them have been my rabbis. So I always followed what they do. The Jewish Center says Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut without a blessing. And on Yom Yerushalayim, with a blessing. Even though Yom HaTzma'ut is much more popular than Yom Yerushalayim, why is it that Yom Yerushalayim gets a bracha and Yom HaTzma'ut doesn't?
It's one step closer to Messianic times, perhaps.
Yeah, a little, because Jerusalem.
Right.
And what happened also in the Six-Day War? Some people argue that God's hand could be more clearly seen in that battle than in 48.
Because in 48, they both took land that was allocated, like in 48 they took land that was allocated to them, give or take, but in 67 there was an expansion.
Expanding land, into, expanding territory into what?
Like Judea
and Samaria, very
and
biblical. Like I just heard this, but
Mitzrayim.
Like 70-80% of the Bible, of the stories in the Torah, takes place in what was reconquered in 67. Yeah. Yehuda v'Shomron, Hebron, and all these different places, Shiloh. So it's got a lot of more religious undertones, Yom Yerushalayim. Also,
not because of the battles and kind of battles.
I think also because of the battle, even though I've studied a lot about
Golan
both.
Golan Heights with like 1,200 tanks from the top versus like 150 tanks at the bottom.
Correct.
That was Yom Kippur.
Now, Six-Day War too. Yom Kippur more so,
yeah,
correct.
Yom Kippur, more so, yeah.
Yom Kippur was a crazy miracle. Because, I mean, Yom Kippur was more disastrous for us. We lost 2,500 Jews in the Yom Kippur War. And Six-Day War, I mean, the Six-Day War was a crazy miracle. You got to study what happened. It was, I mean, they were digging graves in Tel Aviv. They were literally digging graves in Tel Aviv because so many troops had amassed on the southern border of Israel, Egypt, and the northern border in Syria, and then Jordan joins in the middle. We were completely out everything. And the United States told Levi Eshkol, who was the Prime Minister of Israel, was not a great wartime leader. He was a great man, but he was not made for war. He was not one of Israel's best wartime leaders. That if Israel shot the first bullet against these mobilizations along this, that America would not have Israel's back. And knowing full well, the CIA told the Mossad that the only chance Israel has to survive is a preemptive strike. We have records of them telling us that, and then telling us at the same time, you shoot the first bullet, we're not behind you. The fact that we won that war, that was like, it was so over the top, and we literally tripled the size of Israel. Tripled. The Sinai, the Gaza Strip, the Golan Heights, the West Bank. So now, Milchemet HaShechrur, 48, we held out for a month against five combined Arab armies. And that was kind of a miracle too, that we held out for a month until the United Nations were able to enforce a ceasefire.
The Davidka.
I mean, crazy stuff like this. That was a gun that made a lot of noise that convinced our enemies that there were more of us than there actually were. I mean, they were crazy things. Anyway, so the question is, do you let these things pass because we don't have the legal authority? This goes back to our Sinai to Manhattan. We can't really create new holidays. Or can we? Is Yom HaTzma'ut have the same status? It clearly doesn't have the status of a biblical holiday. But does it even have the status of a rabbinic one like Purim or Hanukkah?
There's no mitzvot tied to it. Don't you have to hear Megillah?
You have to hear Megillah. What do you have to do to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut? You got to go to a party? You got to... We say Hallel. We say Hallel. We add prayers.
Not specifically.
We also don't say Tachanun. We don't do this. We don't say the Tachanun. You eat a blue and white cookie. It's a little lame, let's face it. It's very lame in America. You almost went so lame here. You go to Israel, you feel it a little. What's that?
You feel it a lot.
In Israel. Right. Right, because there's a fervor there. There's like, because they're celebrating here. We're trying to like, yeah, something great happened over there. You know, you're not in the country. What's that?
There's flags everywhere and like.
Yeah. We try. We actually last year Yom HaTzmaut we joined with a couple of other young professional groups in the city, at Westside Institutional. It was really beautiful. There were about 500-600 people. It was packed, and it was dancing. And they hired a couple of great singers and soldiers to tell their stories. It was very beautiful. But it's you definitely feel like you're outside of Israel here on those days. Because we're trying to do something, but we don't really have the legal authority to do everything. There's no Megillah, there's no, you know. I mean, we're kind of in the middle. Take a look in the middle. Some authorities maintain that Feinstein that it's absolutely prohibited to add holidays. These authorities rule that while individuals can annually celebrate such events on the day they happen, these celebrations never get incorporated into the general Jewish calendar. Others maintain such events can only be incorporated after they receive unanimous rabbinic sanction. Others rule that every Jewish society can incorporate these days to reflect significant manifestations of God's will toward the community. However, in the author's opinion, this is my friend Michael Broyd who wrote this, a strong case can be made that dispute is not really applicable to the way Thanksgiving is, in fact, celebrated in America. Thanksgiving or Labor Day. Rather, these authorities are referring to the highly ritualized religious expressions of thanks to God that accompany days of religious observance, like services on Yom HaTzmaut. Thanksgiving, like Independence Day and Labor Day. I forgot to mention July 4th. Everyone here celebrates July 4th, but what do you do to celebrate July 4th? You have a barbecue? You go to a sale? Right? What do you do? Right? Buy a car? Thanksgiving, like Independence Day, Labor Day, lacks any ritualized prayer component. Even the holiday meal that many eat is not obligatory under American law. Given the way that the completely secular holidays are celebrated in this era, one would not think that any of them, including Thanksgiving, would be an additional festival in the Jewish calendar. Under this approach, Rav Feinstein's caveat would only limit the ritualized celebration of Thanksgiving. Indeed, it is precisely this type of limitation celebration Feinstein seems to be calling for and which Rav Henkin endorses. So anyway, he's saying, Rabbi Broy, who authored this article, is saying he thinks there's less of a problem. July 4th, Thanksgiving, Labor Day. Because on the American law books, there's nothing you're supposed to do. I actually think it's a problem. They really should. Because you don't feel anything. Like on Veterans Day, it was just Veterans Day. Anybody do anything?
No.
Right, so if you're in school, my daughter, they had a veteran that came to her Jewish school to come and speak, which was great. But most of us, the day passes without, you know, and then we just, it's just like a day off. Well, Veterans Day, I don't know if anyone's off, but like July 4th, Thanksgiving, they're really beautiful things being celebrated, and they're not Christian, necessarily. So I think they're really worthwhile. All three of these authorities would appear to agree that the celebration of a one-time day of Thanksgiving to mark the first time an event worthy of thanks is not problematic. Thus, for example, President Bush declared a day of Thanksgiving in 1991 in response to the victory in the Persian Gulf War. And it would not be problematic, according to any of these opinions, to mark that one-time event with some form of celebration. Indeed, as Noam Feinstein, there is some Talmudic precedent for that form of Thanksgiving. So anyway, if anyone wants to read, it's too late now, but look, take a look at page 27. You may not be so happy with what he says about Halloween. Halloween has got a very interesting history you can read about this day, which has definitely more religious undertones of Halloween. On page 27, page 28, and 29, some endnotes there you should look at, the next few pages. Take this home, read it. It's a good read over Thanksgiving. And then if you want, wait, is there another thing? Is it just Halloween? Yeah, it's just... Oh, my God. A lot of footnotes. All right. Yeah, it's read what he says about Halloween. Tell me what you guys think. What do you think, Matt?
Pretty good.
It's interesting stuff.
Can I ask a quick question about Halloween?
Yeah, please.
So, if you don't celebrate it, can you have candy in case kids knock on your door?
Yeah, I mean, they asked me in my building. I don't think it's really... Like, what are you doing? You're giving a kid candy. Yeah. As long as you're not doing it to celebrate the da-da-da, I think it's okay. You're giving, you know, just make sure it's kosher. Unless you know everyone who's coming to your door is not Jewish, which is impossible in New York. So make sure the candy's kosher, that's all. You know, but trick-or-treating is probably not, you know.
Halloween parties. I don't do that.
Everyone's doing them. Everyone's doing them. I know, they're all, it became a thing. Read the
you
article.
You shouldn't go to Halloween parties.
Ideally. What about, this happens a lot, what about your firm's Christmas party?
They're called holiday parties.
They're,
I mean,
holiday,
no, they're holiday
parties.
Parties.
Festivus.
They're holidays.
Has anyone seen the Festivus episode of Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Come on, it's a Festivus for the rest of us. It's a great... So you're going, if you're going basically, you're not going to celebrate the holiday. It's a holiday thing. You can say you're going for Hanukkah. It's fine. And as long as you're not doing anything that's celebrating Christianity or Christmas.
Can you wear red?
What's that?
Can you wear red at the Christmas party? Red.
Can you wear red? Red, I wouldn't
or
do
white.
I wouldn't do I wouldn't
as
wear
as long as it's not mixed with green.
Yeah, I guess red. It just symbolizes sin. I remember when I moved into my building, they had like a whole thing about the Christmas tree in my building, and they asked me my opinion. So I said, have a Christmas tree. We don't live in a Jewish country. I said, but it would be nice if you can have a menorah there during Hanukkah, which they weren't. So then some other people were offended by the Christmas tree, so now they have a wreath, which looks like somebody died every time I walk into my building. It just looks like a memorial for someone's death. So, and I wrote a letter. I was like, I hope no one thinks that I would be offended. I was very vocal. I said, I think a Christmas tree is great for those who are celebrating Christianity, for those who are not. You know, practicing Christianity, you know, they should have a menorah so that they can, whatever it is.
Well, my parents, like in the Soviet Union, they'd celebrate New Year's with a New Year's tree.
They have a New Year's tree?
Yeah.
Still
no,
best.
No, no,
in, yeah.
Like, I don't know what they call it. It's just New Year's is a very big holiday, and they would, I mean, growing up, we never had any of that.
I don't think it's healthy for people to get so...
Yeah.
To so, I mean... I don't know what the word is, but like so apologetic and politically correct that we can't be proud of our respective holidays. The beauty of America is that people do their own thing and you respect them. You don't apologize for them or mask them by we don't want to offend. Why are you offending? That's not your religion. That's their religion. I don't get it. I don't like it because then it makes everybody apologetic for their, and that's not the point. If you study, I'm going to end with this. If you study what the founding fathers were doing, what were they doing? They were rebelling against the not only taxes, but it was against the Church of England that was imposing a certain brand of Christianity on them. And they had their own understanding of what religion was. They wanted to practice what they believed. That was one of the principles upon which this country was founded. Not to cover up. I saw something that was a... was a Muslim woman now was in Congress.
Yeah.
Right, so she wants...
There's two.
The Brandon hat.
Right.
She's super anti-Israel, but they should allow her to wear a headscarf.
Right.
I think they should allow her to wear whatever she wants to wear. I don't think she should be anti-Israel, but I think she should be allowed, and I think a person should be allowed to wear a yarmulke. I don't think people should... That's not what America was about. You know, and that's not...
She also married her brother for papers.
She did not.
That's
no way.
Not
okay.
Real thing.
I'm not. I don't.
Oh, man.
No, but the only thing is, my dad was always very sensitive. He says, you don't appreciate this because you didn't grow up in an era where you were expected in a public school, as I mentioned earlier, to recite Christian prayers. And that made him feel very uncomfortable as a kid. That's what the rules were, you know. So it should. I just don't think it's not healthy to expect people to cover up their own religion, and that, and that's because it only encourages Jews to do the same thing. So I say, have a tree, have a menorah, have the whole thing. God bless America. Thank you for coming. And I'm teaching upstairs if everybody's interested. My 9:15 room call.
Yeah.
So they.
It's from here. So whenever you want to take it.
It was the form of Christianity.
Oh.
And what did they believe in? What? No, Jesus?
They didn't really believe in Jesus as a God. They believed in Jesus as a Messiah.
That's like Unitarianism.
Kind of.
It's like Islam.
Yeah. What's that?
It's like Islam.
Now, Islam is much even more monotheistically strong.
But they believe in Jesus as a prophet.
Yeah, but not as, you know,
okay.
Not as. They also believe in Moses as a prophet, but not as a prophet that has any religious significance anymore. Whereas they really believe that he's still. I have to do a little more research to get a little more clarity on the deists' views on different things. But they definitely believe more in Jesus than Muslims do. Muslims believe that, like, at some point he had to be replaced. The deists don't believe that. They don't believe that.
Hold the president of the stuff
in there. Nice.
Oh, here we go.
Got it. Don't start with me.
I like this.
Because Bammy has a step. Don't start with me, Ronan. What?
Oh,
what? What? You wish you could flirt with these. That's an easy way out for someone to argue with.
I can take care of a few. What you could
Ronan, how was Meslas Isharim? Really?
I can't concentrate on these really lofty classes. Like this, like,
oh, I see.
Yeah.
It
doesn't have shame
I get lost. I need like spurts of like.
The Ramchal is like that though, so it's.
Yeah. It's like really not.
I definitely know what you mean.
Me,
did your plan
like,
fail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's
how many people want
you?
No.
What's prohibition? They have all live music.
Happy Turkey.
Thanks.
Everyone, happy Thanksgiving.